Hello, my name is Ray Jefferson, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM. Conversations is a collaboration between KWBU and Creative Waco, where we sit down with leaders and innovators in arts and culture in our city. I'm in charge of marketing and PR at a nonprofit called Creative Waco. We're the city's local arts agency, which means that we use strategy and funding to help the city and the community leaders here in town shape Waco's artistic and cultural identity. On today's episode, you'll hear a regular segment that we do called David and Art with David Smith. We're also talking with Susan Taylor, who's the director of the Waco Symphony Orchestra. She's here to tell us more about the upcoming season, as well as what her career has included in her experience in the arts as a whole. But first, Creative Waco Executive Director Fiona Bond is here with info about an amazing resource for arts leaders to think about capitalizing on this upcoming fall. Thank you for being here today, Fiona.
Hi, Ray. Thank you so much for having me along.
For sure. So can you start by just talking about the importance of, you know, even forming community for creative leaders, especially in a city here like, you know, like in Waco?
Absolutely. And, most of the great movements in art and the real kind of emergence of cities as real cultural centres have started with a group of people that gets together regularly, with people who really care about the cultural life of that community, really getting to know each other and getting to know what each other does.
Sure. So have you seen, having resources like that really be helpful for our community here?
Absolutely. So a few years ago, actually well before Creative Waco was formed, the Chamber of Commerce with Chris McGowan leading the charge at the time, because he was over urban development at that time for the Chamber of Commerce, brought together all the arts leaders in Waco to form a group called Waco Arts Alliance. And that group is really what Creative Waco emerged out of, the cultural district emerged out of. You know, all the things that we're now seeing flourishing in the arts and cultural
Sure.
world of Waco came out of people getting together regularly and just talking about what was needed, what their issues were, what the needs were, and starting to do projects alongside each other too, because when people start getting together and talking about these things, then that emerges into actual tangible projects and ideas and things that grow legs and arms and are able to take flight.
Definitely, and are able to change the landscape of our cultural identity here in Waco. So when we say leaders in the arts, can you clarify exactly who this organization is for?
Absolutely. Well, Waco Arts Alliance is Waco's networking group for arts professionals. So we say it brings together the people who think and dream and plan and do the hard work of making exciting artistic and cultural things happen in Waco. It's open to anyone who runs an artistic or cultural event. You don't have to have any kind of special qualification. Or anyone who runs an organization or an activity in the arts and cultural space. It can be nonprofit or it can be a for-profit entity. And by meeting regularly, it creates opportunities for professional development. So we often have training sessions or kind of info building sessions. We get a chance to hear from people at state level. So, for example, Anne Graham, who is the director of Texans for the Arts, has come to talk to us and is actually due to talk to us again in September about the state of the arts in terms of, you know, what's happening at state level, what kinds of resources are available at state level for people operating in the cultural sector. It also allows us to do joint projects. So we've done things like, for example, the family summer camp calendar. The creative summer camp calendar was an initiative that came out of the Arts Alliance. And it also helps us to get better at communicating what we do to each other and just becoming more aware of all the great things that are going along.
Sure. Yeah, I think I've been along to, you know, several Arts Alliance meetings, and I think it's really great to have the opportunity for organizations to see where maybe they're doing the same work as one another and figuring out how we as a community can best, you know, utilize our skills and our resources so that no one's duplicating anything, but also maybe places where people can link up and kind of do work together, you know.
And it really helps when people know what kind of great work is being done by the different organizations. So, for example, you know, if the symphony is bringing someone who's going to perform in a particular genre, then it allows us to help them get the word out to other people in our community who might be interested in that form of music. You know, when the arts festival is coming up, it allows people to be able to plug into whatever the theme is for the arts festival that year.
Yeah. Awesome. This is so great. I'm really glad that we have this resources that allows us to build up a network for creatives here in our city. Thank you so much, Fiona, for stopping by and chatting with us about this. Where can people go to find out more information about how to join Arts Alliance?
They can go to our website. We have an Arts Alliance page on the website, which explains a little bit more. It actually gives the program. We're just putting together the program for the next academic year.
How often do they meet?
At the moment, it's meeting every other month. But in fact, it ends up being pretty much every month because it tends to be that we have a meeting every other month. And then in between times, we have things like trips and activities
sure.
that people can plug into if they're relevant
yeah.
to what they're, you know, what they're doing and what their organization is doing.
Great. And is there a Facebook page people can check out?
There is. There's a Facebook page which is called Waco Arts Alliance, but you have to ask to join that Facebook page.
Okay.
Because we want to keep it really, really relevant to the people who are needing that information. So people can email info@creativewaco.org if they would like to join Arts Alliance, if they'd like to go onto the mailing list, and also if they'd like to go onto that Facebook page.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Fiona. Now it's time for our regular segment called David and Art with David Smith.
Along with the patriotic parades, fireworks, and cooking hot dogs on the grill, celebrating the 4th of July always makes me think of four distinctively American paintings. Three of them are, perhaps, to be expected. The first one is John Trumbull's famous painting of the Declaration of Independence being presented to the Continental Congress. The second one is Emanuel Leutze's stirring scene of George Washington crossing the Delaware. The third is John Singleton Copley's 1768 portrait of a pensive Paul Revere. And the fourth one, well, we'll come back to that. Ironically, the holiday also makes me think of the work of the great Russian abstractionist Kazimir Malevich. Of all the artists of the Russian avant-garde, none was more serious than he was about there being a transcendent spirituality in art, and nobody pressed a minimalist kind of abstraction further. He worked his way through a series of different styles before really hitting his stride around 1915. But suddenly, the last paintings he did toward the end of his life were heavy-handed pictures of Soviet peasants tilling the soil. The state was telling him what he had to paint. Many of the generation of abstract painters to which Malevich belonged had to flee the Soviet Union for their lives. Under Joseph Stalin, modernism was condemned as degenerate, and those painters who didn't fall in line were shipped off to a Siberian gulag or simply shot. After being interrogated and tossed in jail for 2 years, Malevich avoided a grimmer fate by abandoning the abstraction about which he felt so strongly and following the line of socialist realism, the only style that met with official approval. Being forced by the government to abandon his creativity and instead serve the ideals of the state or forfeit his life was a horrible abuse of both art and artist. This sad culmination of Malevich's career is the reason I think of the fourth painting on my July 4th list, Jackson Pollock's Lavender Mist, my favorite of his controversial drip paintings. While Pollock wasn't political with his art, the freedom evident by the spattered paint on the huge canvas is testimony, for me, of the absolute value of American freedom. We're all familiar with the occasional controversies over censorship that sometimes erupt when government and art nudge up against each other in the United States. Most of us have also seen a painting or two that we think is an affront to decency, good taste, or art in general. But such episodes aside, the freedom that American artists enjoy is another cause for us to celebrate the birth of the United States on July 4th.
This is Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM, and I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Our next guest is an important leader in local music. Susan Taylor is the executive director of the Waco Symphony Orchestra, which she has been with for 42 years. Today, she's joining us to talk about the incredible lineup for the upcoming season. Susan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. So before we really get into things, would you mind just telling me a little bit more about your background in the arts?
Well, I majored in college at the University of Texas in art history.
Okay.
But I was a studio artist and really didn't have a lot of musical background. But I dealt with the arts way back in elementary school, and it's stayed with me all through my life. I think the arts are just so important for our community, for anybody's community. But I studied interior design as a freshman in college and ended up majoring in art history and minoring in studio art. And afterwards, after I graduated, I worked for the Texas Education Agency as an artist.
Okay.
Down in Austin until I had my children. So moved to Waco. And then I worked at the Art Center when I moved to Waco.
Really?
As a receptionist when it was downtown.
Yeah.
On Franklin. And I did that for about 4 or 5 years when my kids were smaller, and still kept me in tune with the arts in Waco.
Sure.
And my kids got a little older, and I wanted to work at home. And my father told me to talk to the director of the president of the board of the Waco Symphony, because they didn't have an office back then, and they had the lady worked out of her home for selling tickets. And so I applied for that job because she was retiring.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked out of my home for the symphony selling tickets for about 11 years. And then the board decided they needed an office when the first conductor retired and the new one came on, Stephen Hyde. So that's when we transitioned into an office, and my kids were old enough where I could work out of the home.
Sure.
And it's kind of transitioned into a whole lot of different jobs, but it's always been in the arts. I just have loved working in the arts.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you've really seen the symphony grow then.
Oh, I have, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing. So why do you find orchestral music to be so compelling of an art form?
Well, the interesting thing, when I got the job as the executive secretary back then, and it transferred into the executive director,
mm-hmm.
I really didn't know anything about classical music. My family never listened to it in the home, mm-hmm. and I think I heard one concert in college, and that's really all that I had heard. And when I got this job, it just opened up a whole new world for me. It was just amazing what I was hearing and what I was seeing it takes to put a piece together and learn the music and the conducting end and the hard work, and just amazed me how difficult it was and how beautiful it was.
Yeah.
But it was just a whole new world, and I just loved it. I still can't wait to get up and go to work every day, because classical music is just so fulfilling, and just we need it so much in our world today, and it's just, I see how it moves people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been a wonderful profession to be around.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you actually touched on something that I wanted to ask you about. You know, in your role as the executive director of a symphony, do you feel that not having that musical background hampered your ability, especially like early on, in any way to do your role, or do those things kind of not necessarily need to go together?
No, it really didn't. It was really better.
Okay.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Because the conductor has his job, and with the musicians, and I was the administrative part.
Sure.
And so I didn't really need to know the details of making the music. And I didn't know anything, so I couldn't get into that world.
Sure.
Which was probably better.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't my expertise. So I stayed over in the administrative end. But I've learned so much about it, and been around it enough to learn a lot about it, and watch the rehearsals with the conductor and how it all comes together, and just I've got so many wonderful pieces I love that I, of course, wouldn't have heard if I hadn't been involved with the mm-hmm. symphony. So it's fine that I didn't have any, but now it's nice that I do.
Sure.
Any interest in it. So.
Yeah.
It's worked.
Cool. So obviously you guys aren't giving performances every single day. No. What does the day-to-day look like for a symphony?
Well, The interesting thing is everybody asks me if I take off the summer.
Uh-huh.
And that's the time that we are selling our season tickets.
Okay.
Season ticket brochure goes out, just went out last week, first of the summer. And we take in all our revenue and the tickets, ticket assignments in the summer. I write grants in the summer a lot for the upcoming year. And then in the fall, we start having our concerts. The concerts we have, when I first started, we had three classical concerts. And they were on Monday nights at 8 o'clock, which seems strange, but that's when it was.
Yeah.
Until the new conductor came on. And then we switched it to 7:30 and changed our day of the week and so forth. But so I've seen it grow from a small amount of concerts into more concerts. And that all came about. It's very expensive to put on a concert. And we hire the musicians. Right now, contracts are going out for the musicians for the year.
Okay.
Or the annual. And they're people that have auditioned.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're in the orchestra, they don't have to audition again. We hold auditions every summer at the end of the summer. But we offer contracts to the ones that are already in it that are still around. We hire orchestra members from Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and, of course, a lot from Waco, a mm-hmm. lot from Baylor. A lot of the students and the faculty are in the orchestra.
Sure.
And so those are sent out in the summer. So by the time the fall comes, we've got all the players hired, and the pieces are, of course, set. The brochure that went out last week, those artists and those pieces are selected by the conductor around January, February, March, ahead of when the brochure is sent out. And we have a board committee that's called the Artistic Advisory Committee that meets with myself and the conductor, and we discuss certain artists that we might want to have. We've grown recently to have a Pops concert with our four classical.
Sure.
We have four classical now and a Pops. And then we also do our holiday concert. It could be either the Nutcracker or our Christmas concert.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're planning all those during the year for the upcoming year, even though we're putting on our current year. And that committee of the board will sit down and throw out names, possibilities, with the conductor's input, and then the Pops concerts are discussed. I go back and look them up on I have a catalog and agents I call and contact and find out what their fee is, find out what their availability is,
mm-hmm.
and kind of line up a schedule with the dates that Waco Hall is available. That's kind of our biggest hurdle, is because we can't get dates in Waco Hall confirmed until January of the year, of prior year.
Mm-hmm.
So we might contact some of the artists in the fall for the upcoming season, but we can't really contract them until we know what dates in Waco Hall are available.
Sure.
We have windows we kind of know.
Sure.
But we're the guest at Waco Hall,
yeah.
So they certainly have to set their calendar first. And they've been very good to kind of hold little windows for us that they know we might need. So we work within that parameter. And then the conductor works on the pieces that will be performed about March or April. First thing he finds out, though, is what piece the artist is going to perform. And they pick that in consultation with the conductor.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't realize this is learning all this information. These artists might have three or four selections they're playing for a year. Their year they're touring, because they can't. They have to already know them pretty well.
Sure.
So we have a parameter of pieces that they give us.
Interesting. I didn't realize.
Well,
that.
I didn't either. So I thought they knew everything, but they don't, and they're very difficult. You know, they're 45-minute pieces that they learn from memory, and so
that's understandable.
You can understand it. So then the conductor will pick from those selections what he wants the artist to perform. Then he will work on the other pieces, depending on what the artist. If it's a long piece, instruments are being used, and he'll try to keep the other pieces pretty much within that instrumentation,
mm-hmm.
because when we get together for the rehearsals, we have four rehearsals and then a concert with our musicians. And they're paid so much for a service, which is a 2.5 hour rehearsal. Mm-hmm. So even if they're not playing a piece, but they're playing one piece but not the others, we still pay him because he rehearses all the pieces at the rehearsal.
Sure.
So he tries to get, if it's a big piece that the orchestra, that the soloist selected, he tries to use a big piece on the other pieces because he can utilize all the musicians because they're there anyway.
Yeah.
So he's real good about mm-hmm. working and trying to not waste the time of the money and the players. So that's all done in the spring. And certainly we're still doing our season. And so the spring is kind of setting the season, upcoming season, and then it falls into place the next year. So we'll continue our season that was going like it was starts in September and ends in April. So we're still in our season, current season, performing, but we're still planning the upcoming season in the spring normally.
Yeah, cool. So I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned, pulling talent, local talent for these the performances that you guys do. Do you guys kind of try to strike a balance between, of course, you want people who are really good and know what they're doing.
Right, right.
But you do also want to, you know, honor the talent that is here in the city.
Yes.
Is one of those two kind of more what you guys start out with whenever you're deciding who to bring in? Like, do you start off saying, let's try to get as many local people as possible and then fill in around that? Or is it more about who can actually
You mean for the orchestra or for the guest artist?
For the orchestra.
Yes. No, we'll audition anybody that wants to audition.
Okay.
And those are publicized.
Sure.
Anybody can audition. The conductor and a committee of the principal players in the orchestra, which are usually the faculty member at Baylor, will be the judges. And that takes place end of August usually.
Okay.
And that's all. Certainly, we want anybody to audition. We have people from out of town, of course, come in. And a lot of the Baylor people. Now, the Baylor people, that's why we do it at the end of August, because the Baylor people aren't here until about mid-August.
Okay.
So that gives them the opportunity to audition, mm-hmm. too. And once they pass the audition, they're in the orchestra until they leave or decide to retire or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the students leave after a couple of years or 3 years, so then we're always taking in more more musicians at Baylor primarily.
Yeah. Have you seen any students stick around to continue to play, mm-hmm. even after they've graduated?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have. And we like them to do that.
Yes.
And one of the reasons we like them to do it is we don't have to pay travel. We have travel expenses for the out of town. And every rehearsal we have with these players, with their pay and their travel, it's about a $7,000 expense each time we get together.
Wow.
So we're spending $28,000 before the concert even starts.
Yeah.
So it's very expensive.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. Okay, great. Well, would you like to jump into the new season and talk about who you guys have coming?
I would love to.
Sure.
I have it right here.
Okay.
I had to bring it because I can't always remember the dates because they're just now getting it cemented in my head.
Sure.
So our first concert is going to be a little bit later. The first one is October 11th.
Okay.
Usually we have one in September. And it worked out where the dates worked, and the dates worked for the artist. We're having Corey Shirovsek. He's a violinist.
Okay.
And he's been here before in 2002 and very well received. And we wanted to have him back. And he's playing the Beethoven Symphony No. 4 for people that might know that piece.
Yeah.
But he's amazing. I mean, he was he's so intelligent. In the brochure, I'm going to see where I've got this. I don't want to read this. He got a degree, a master's degree in both music and math at age 16.
Cool.
So he's very intelligent, very smart.
That's
so
incredible.
So he's going to be our first artist. And then second artist is our Pops concert, and we're bringing back Chris Bode, the trumpet player.
Okay.
He's a Grammy Award winner and one of the top trumpeters in the United States. And just we had him here when we celebrated our 50th anniversary. And so he's back.
Awesome.
To play. And he's wonderful. That's November 15th on a Thursday. This is in Waco Hall. And for January, we have January 17th, we have Gabriela Martinez. She's a pianist. She's not really very young. I mean, she's probably in her 20s, late 20s, but she's beautiful. And they can see her picture in our brochure. And interestingly, one of the first things his agent asked me when we contracted her was, she's a big fan of Chip and Joanna.
Oh.
Can you take her to the silos?
And that's so funny.
And could she stay in one of their bed and breakfasts? And I said, well, if you'd like to put the fee, we could do that. But anyway, no, we're going to have fun going to the restaurant, the Magnolia table, and then going to the silos. I think it'll be fun.
That's
so
great.
She's playing the Liszt Concerto number one. And she's very pretty. In March, when we have our Symphony Bells and Brass presentation, it will be Saturday, March 23rd. All these are at 7:30, except Chris Bode will be at 8. He just wants it at 8 because he will meet with our donors before the concert for a reception rather than after the concerts, which is primarily what we do.
Sure.
Have the artists meet our donors afterwards, but he wanted to do them before. So he'll meet it. His concert will be at 8. The March concert is all orchestral, which spotlights the orchestra, highlights the orchestra. And I think Stephen Hyde, the conductor, has planned some solos for the people that are currently in the orchestra, which is fun to highlight those people, the faculty members and some of the students.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be fun. And that's a whole lot of pieces. I won't go over those.
Great.
A lot of them, you'll love them. So on our April concert, which is our last concert, it's on Thursday, April 11th. And we're having a narrator, and his name is Henry Winkler.
Awesome.
The Fonz from Happy Days. And so we were contacted by his agent that he started doing this with orchestras. And we said, well, you know, that might be kind of fun.
Yeah, that is very fun.
So he will be performing on the first half. And then on the second half of that concert, we have the Moon Twins. It's Han Moon and Young Moon. And I'm probably mispronouncing that. I've been told how to pronounce it many times, and I try to remember. But they're seniors in high school at Midway. They're in our youth orchestra. They have performed with many orchestras around the state and out of the state. And they're darling. They're brother and sister twins. And they will be playing a piece together on the second half. And it's the Brahms Concerto for violin and cello. One's a violinist and one's a cellist. So we're really excited about that because they're homegrown.
They
go to local schools in our youth orchestra. And as our conductor said, if we don't have them when they're seniors, we'll probably never get to have them because they're going to rise and go all across the country, probably to New York and to college. And so they're very amazing.
Yeah,
so we're happy that we have them coming for next year. So
that's awesome.
And we're having Nutcracker. That's not part of our season. That's part of an extra concert. And that's going to be on December 9th, Sunday, December 9th at 2. It's a matinee. And it's with the Ballet Frontier of Texas with the ballet company, with the orchestra.
Awesome. So, that's very exciting. Susan, where can people go online to see this lineup?
We have a website, wacosymphony.com.
Okay.
And I believe our season, we didn't mail these until our website was up. So it should be all ready to go, and you can order tickets online. You can call the symphony office if you'd rather. The phone number's online also.
Perfect.
Do take orders over the phone. So
okay, awesome. Thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful lineup this season.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for a recap of my chat with Susan. Catch the next episode of Conversations on Friday, July 27th at 11:30 a.m. and 8 p.m. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU FM. I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Thanks for tuning in.